Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Alex Avila with Love University. I'm a psychologist, author, and speaker. And every week we talk about love and relationships and also self-esteem, how to be the best person you can be. And we're very excited today to have a really very interesting guest who's a world-renowned dating and relationship coach, Mr. Scott McKay, who actually worked with his wife, Emily McKay. And since 2005, they've helped over 300,000 people find love in relationships through their podcasts, newsletters, and social media. They have number one bestsellers and been on many media. So I'm very pleased to present Mr. Scott McKay. Scott, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Alex. It's a pleasure to be on your show with you, man.
Yeah, we're very excited. And one thing, looking at your materials, you've done this for a while. You've helped a lot of people. And the thing is, I really liked is that you said you met your wife and she was a single mom, and within 7 months, you got married. How did that happen?
Well, 9 months to be exact. But yeah, I had actually come off a very brutal divorce and decided I didn't want to feel like a victim. I wanted to go out and learn what it meant to be better with women, to do the impossible and try to understand women, and to become a man who, as I call it, deserves what he wants. In other words, I wanted to discover how to be the best person I could be so I could, you know, deserve a great woman in my life. And after mastering some ways of getting to know women, specifically online dating in the case of my wife, we met and we hit it off immediately. And we just knew we were on the same team and we got each other and all those wonderful things I talk about all the time nowadays. And 12 years later, I wouldn't change a thing. I'm still thrilled every morning
awesome.
To wake up next to her.
That's a great love story. Now, some people might say, after 9 months, I mean, is that enough time to know someone? Or do you feel that it's possible in a short period of time to find your soulmate?
Well, I always tell people, you know, you don't want to meet someone and think they're wonderful and go elope to Vegas like a week later. That's certainly irresponsible.
Of course.
The thing about it is, I think it depends on how much time you're spending with each other. We knew we wanted to be together forever pretty solidly after about 20 minutes.
Wow. Okay. That's
I mean, she was just everything I'd ever, everything I'd ever looked for. But no, we did wait 9 months to actually get married. And she was wondering what took me so long to ask her to marry her when, you know, 7 months rolled around.
Okay. But usually we have the brain chemicals that are released, kind of like amphetamines that last about 9 months, long enough for the woman to get pregnant biologically. So there's that honeymoon stage.
Like I was saying, I think it depends on how much you're seeing each other. Like if it's a long distance relationship and you're only seeing each other for 2 days every 3 months or so, I think that it's a bad idea to get married that quickly. But Emily and I lived relatively close in proximity to each other, and we were pretty much together constantly after we met.
Yeah, sounds like a great story. So Scott, let's get into your material, because you have a lot of fascinating material. I looked at your website, and you really have an amazing number of products and things for both men and women. But let's start with men, because we have a lot of so-called sensitive males out there, introvert and shy, and I work a lot with them. And you talk about teaching men how to be invincible, be like a lion, and take your power back. What does that mean?
Well, unfortunately, I think a lot of men are being told that their masculinity is toxic without really getting a description on what it was that became toxic about them being male to begin with, just simply that it is, without talking about what virtues were corrupted by this terrible vice. And I think even more significantly, Alex, we haven't been told what to replace it with. It's almost as if angry women out there have become somewhat jaded by certain men in their lives and have pronounced upon all of us that we need to change and that we have to go against millennia of being men and somehow become either more neutered or perhaps even become more feminized. And interestingly enough, a lot of the angry women who grab the microphone and demand that we stop being quote-unquote toxic as men are taking more of the masculine traits for themselves, even as they're telling us to basically sit down and shut up and stop being men. And I believe very strongly that masculinity is virtuous. And although there are men who are corrupted and their masculinity is not used for positive purposes, I think men should feel free to stand up and claim the fact that they're proudly male and proudly masculine, and we are the providers and defenders of that which is feminine. And women who are truly feminine, I think, have the higher calling in life because they stand for and bring the gifts that we all live for, you know, comfort and joy and fun and nurture. I mean, that's what we all look forward to on the weekends.
Yeah, and, definitely. I like that.
Go ahead.
Well, you're talking about, I mean, we know about the Eastern philosophy, the yin and yang, you know, the masculine and feminine energies. And some males have more of the so-called feminine energy, some women have more of the masculine. And but I think what you're trying to say is that to basically celebrate the masculine and also the feminine, and for males, the idea to have the balance, because you've heard about, you know, in the so-called seduction community, they teach guys how to be overly maybe dominant and kind of like maybe sometimes even aggressive in a certain way. But it sounds like you're not saying that. You're talking about character and virtue and almost being like a gentleman. Can you tell us more about that?
Well, I distanced myself from anything that the seduction community taught about how to be manipulative and to use women or purposefully try to hurt women. I want to respect women, and I also want to respect men. And it seems like there are very few outlets nowadays, excuse me, who have the refreshing idea of honoring and respecting both men and women and both masculinity and femininity.
Yes, definitely.
You mentioned the word dominant, and I think that's one of those words that's unfortunately brought a stigma. And I think that's part of the agenda to weaken masculinity and label it toxic, because dominance doesn't have to be abusive and dominance doesn't have to be hurtful. What happens is if you're a man and you're providing and you're protecting and you're not dominant, then, you know, you're going to lose. You're going to lose everything. You're going to lose the ability to provide and protect, and you're going to cause your woman in your life and you're going to cause the family who depends on you for that to look upon you and say, this guy isn't making me feel safe. Mm-hmm. So if you are, let's put it this way, what's the opposite of being dominant? The opposite of being dominant is being utterly passive. And that is not a trait that causes women to be attracted. And I think even if we're talking about our postmodern society, where women certainly do become captains of industry and have wonderful sense of personal power in their lives and are certainly entitled to all the rights and privileges and equal pay that men are, you have to look at the fact that masculinity and femininity are the building blocks of sexual attraction. They are what make us horny for each other. So regardless of whether a man has anything to be dominant over or to be dominant about, he's got to give the impression to that woman that he's capable of being the provider and protector, or else she's going to put him in the just be friend zone and she's just not going to feel it for him.
That makes a lot of sense. Now, the thing is, we also have what are called the sensitive males and even introvert males. And actually, we have one here, Reggie, as my engineer. Reggie, you're an introvert and shy guy a little bit. And you're still a nice guy. Do you feel that you need to be a dominant man to attract a woman?
Well, yeah. I mean, I totally agree. I feel like when I started being more, I'm a confident in myself. And I mean, I'm still not super confident, but I'm more confident now than I was before. I feel women respond to me differently now because of that.
Okay, so you shaved your beard a little bit, right? You got a little bit of a motorcycle jacket or something.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. That's exactly what I did.
So, what do you think, Scott? What's your advice for shy guys like Reggie? Because you say they have a distorted view of social interactions. What's your advice to the shy males?
Well, first of all, I want to paint a very clear differentiation between being shy and being introverted. Ah, they're not the same thing.
Of course.
I am probably, by Myers-Briggs standards, for example, mm-hmm. more of an introvert than an extrovert.
Right.
I get my energy from my solitude. I'm not one to hang out at huge parties and really enjoy the thrill of being in a throng of people at a concert. But I was formerly a shy person. And to me, shyness is social fear, social reticence. And the way I put it is you need to club that over the head with a shovel until it stops twitching, because it's killing your ability to relate to other people. And frankly, I think other people, the real shame of being shy is you think you're being nice and you think you're being yielding to other people. And really, if you're shy and quiet and passive, it upsets people. It makes them mad at you. It's like, why won't you just speak up? Why don't you just tell me what you want? Like if you go to the counter at a sandwich, a delicatessen, and order a sandwich, And you say, and it's busy and it's lunchtime. The guy or the lady even says, what would you like? And you go, well, I think maybe I would kind of like, if you're in New York City, they're going to go next.
Right. It depends where you are.
Throw their eyebrows.
Exactly. Well, the thing is, I mean, I wrote a book called The Gift of Shyness. I mean, shyness can be considered a sensitivity and also reflection. But I think what you're talking about is the self-consciousness, the self-observer that criticizes us. And it makes us feel sometimes inferior. But the introversion, as you said, is the energy, right? We get energy internally. So in terms of, let's say a guy is a nice guy. Now, I think you talk about this too, the friend zone and things like that. Is it possible for a nice guy to attract a so-called nice woman who's also introvert and shy? And they can have a good connection based on that, their similarities.
Well, two shy people are never going to meet each other.
Well, actually, online
that's
they
your
can,
first
right,
obstacle
nowadays.
Right there. Well, I mean, you've got a situation. There's so much to talk about here.
Of course.
You got, first of all, you got a situation where the world is littered with tragic stories of people who were too shy to even meet each other who would have been perfect for each other. And that's where I talk about situations like shyness-induced snobbery, which is where we fear rejection from someone we're attracted to so much that we're not going to give that other person the benefit of knowing we're even attracted to them unless they have the opportunity to reject us.
Right.
Therefore, we may be interacting with people we're not attracted to. Mm-hmm. We blow off this other person like a rusty muffler, and they're wondering why we can't stand them.
Sure.
That's what happens there. Now, you also said something about being nice.
Yes.
If you're talking about being Mr. Nice Guy and why Mr. Nice Guy, that often recited persona, isn't attractive to women, it has nothing to do with being a high-quality person with a good heart. It has to do with either fearing loss such that you feel like you've got to walk on eggshells and do ultra, quote-unquote, nice things or else she's going to leave you, or it's because you have sort of this sleazy sales guy agenda of being really nice and shining her shoes because you're trying to get something off her. Now, those two scenarios are rather related. I mean, you may be so needy for sex or attention or approval or whatever that you can't stand it. And then that causes you to fear that you're not going to get it and that she's going to leave you. But, you know, that double-edged sword of being, you know, Mr. Nice Guy in the classically detrimental sense is what kills relationships all the time.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, but you mentioned the seduction community. A lot of very bad advice got handed down from a couple of 800-pound gorillas in the seduction community over the years and has never really been challenged. And one of them is that you have to be either a nice guy or a bad boy. In other words, bad boys, guys who are jerks, guys with tattoos and Harleys and guys who are real quote-unquote alpha and kind of abuse other people and make fun of them, whatever, are the ones who get women. And the guys who are quote-unquote Mr. Nice Guy are the ones who get put in the justy friend zone and they're always frustrated. Well, unfortunately, I think that that old worn-out trope is not only past its time relative to the seduction community itself, which is passé, but I don't think it was ever true to begin with. You could go off the board and look at a completely different example, which is a man who's a good man. I mean, a good man with a good heart, a guy who's dominant and brave and courageous enough to make positive decisions and has enough wisdom in his life to do so, isn't going to take any crap off anybody, but also, you know, holds the people he loves and who he cares about in high enough esteem that he makes decisions in everybody's best interest instead of being a selfish, jerky guy.
Yes, kinda,
that's the way to be.
Yeah, I kind of see what you're saying, and I kind of agree that there's a middle path between being dominant and total, you know, not having power or inner power. But I think the key about niceness is that not to be artificially nice or to please or impress, but being nice because that's your nature. In other words, you're a compassionate person, you're a person of gratefulness and kindness, and that's something that resonates externally if you have it internally. So I think that's where we talk about character and virtue, where a male can be a gentle man. You know, if you think of that phrase, right? He's gentle, but he's also a man. So he's kind of in the middle of the two sectors. And in terms of shyness, I mean, think about it. The internet has been the greatest boon for shy people because now people can meet, you know, without even going face-to-face, and it is a good way to connect. But, of course, you still have to meet in person, and I think that's the important part. Now,
well,
you also
that's the kicker, right?
Yeah. You also talk about women telling you to be yourself, and also they want a man who listens. Is that true, or do you think there's a hidden agenda there?
Well, I mean, whenever I talk about the contextual sense of dating advice as or being yourself as dating advice, I'm usually noting the frustration that people feel when they're told that. Mm-hmm. Because if not, if yourself isn't working, then it's kind of a circular argument to be told to just be yourself. But the truth of the matter is, when you are your best self, the kind of man I would call a big four man.
Yes.
A man, and you're talking about character, you're talking yes. about being a gentleman, exactly. those things. You know, when you're authentically who you would like to be, not only do you attract the people you want to attract, you're also, you know, you're being your true self in a way that's going to be attractive. But I think women want men to be themselves so that they don't feel like they don't know who the hell is in front of them. Because women are security, safety-seeking creatures, and they want to know if the real version of you, you know, the yourself that's true, is going to jump out from behind a bush someday in the future and be different than Mr. Nice Guy, yes. who she's finding it hard to trust.
This is a great point. In the book Love Types, I wrote about the dating masquerade. You know, we all have on masks many times in the single world. And then once the mask comes off, you may find you're totally incompatible or much different. And then, as you say, you know, women are afraid of that happening, and even males too, that the person they fell in love with is totally different. So you're saying be yourself, but also be your best self. In other words, express who you really are, and don't try to hide that fact. If you are quieter, maybe that's your style. You know, you're not going to be an extrovert overnight, or vice versa. You might stay home a little bit before the marriage, but then you want to go out with your friends and then socialize. So it's good to make that clear at the beginning. So that, you know, there is a better connection, right? It's a true connection and compatible. And I like also what you say about the nice guy versus the bad boy. So you're saying there needs to be a middle position. It's not either extreme. There's a third option here.
Well, I'm going to backtrack for a second because you mentioned listening. And I want to address that because that's important. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of times when women say they want a man who listens, a lot of times guys misread that as she wants me to obey her and basically wants me to become henpecked and have her tell me what she wants to do. And I don't think that's what they mean. I think women are saying, you know, I need a man who's going to take the time to get to know who I am and what my fears are, what my dreams are, what my hopes are, what my wants are, what my needs are. Because otherwise, how can he be a provider and protector if he doesn't even have a path, if he doesn't even know those things? That's why women love men who listen. And,
yes.
As far as that goes, I think that's often a revelation to men. I also believe that introverted people can be very much better on dates than extroverted people because they're yes. good at connecting with people one-on-one. So again, I can't underscore enough, there's a huge difference between shyness, which is social reticence, and introversion, which is an integral part of one's personality type. And I don't believe that there are, you know, apart from anything clinically dysfunctional.
Right, of course. I mean,
psychopathy or whatever.
Yeah, you can have a shy
personality type is negotiable. And that's part of what's going to make you get along with someone and be, you know, compatible with them or not. And I couldn't agree more that if you come to a date with a mask on trying to be someone you're not, you're perhaps cheating yourself out of an opportunity to connect with someone.
Exactly. So as a shy introvert, you're a good talker, Scott. You must have transformed yourself a little bit. You're able to communicate pretty well.
Well, I don't think that being shy or being introverted has anything to do with one's ability to be able to string words together either.
Right. Well, it takes some energy. You know, introverts need the energy to be able to produce the words. And then shyness is the comfort zone, which I think, you know, we all develop over time.
Right. I mean, people who are shy may be wonderful talkers, but they just need to feel comfortable with the people they're social with before they get rolling.
Now, Scott, right now, you know, I'm thinking that listeners are probably saying, wait a minute, this is all about guys. How about the ladies out there, the females? let's give them a little bit of advice. And you do have very interesting programs where you talk about women, how to meet the man of your dreams, and how to bounce back from heartbreak. Because I know for some women, they say they get divorced and maybe they feel maybe they're cheated on or, you know, there's maybe a little bit of resentment or even bitterness toward males in the future. And they hold that inside them. So how do you help women heal, let's say, from previous heartbreaks to actually find that soulmate, the man of their dreams?
Well, I think what I'm about to say isn't even gender specific. I think I deal with men and women both who have had their hearts broken. And it's just like any other traumatic experience in life. People handle it different ways. I mean, some people can have something relatively, I'm not going to say innocuous, but not something other people would say, well, you know, that wasn't so bad. And they end up with PTSD over it and are scarred for life and have a hard time socially functioning ever again. And then you have people who have undergone just tremendous adversity that most of us in the Western world, for example, would wilt under. You know, my wife and I just watched a movie that's several years old now called The True Lie. And it was about the lost boys of Sudan. It's a wonderful movie.
Oh, yes.
And it starts off when those kids are children fleeing the civil war in Sudan. And what they had to go through and what they endured would just absolutely cause most of us in our mollycoddled Western world to crawl into a fetal position at the foot of our bed and suck our thumb.
Of course.
But, you know, the story is them making it to the United States and is a very good allegory for the validity of people emigrating to this country, even from what our president would definitely call a crap hole country.
Exactly. Those are big issues, definitely, and there's a lot of pain.
And they're strong, and they make it, and they look past it. And so it's about grit. It's about intestinal fortitude.
Exactly.
It's about emotional power.
Exactly.
Scott, let's go that's not here. Something that men or women have heard. But anyway, go ahead.
Okay. I'm just trying to get you a little more gender specific because you did talk about how to look and feel like Ms. Right, how to be irresistible in some of your material. So just for the females, ladies specifically, how do they look like Mrs. Right? How do they get that feeling?
You know, I've known women who I actually interviewed a lady one time, and she wrote a book about how to get your commitment phobic man to marry you.
Yes.
And I said to her, you know, offline, off the record, I said, hey, what do you have to say about women who perhaps can't get past a third date without every guy they ever go out with going to Jared and buying him a ring and proposing? And she paused and it said almost in a sullen way, it's like, why would you ask if that doesn't exist?
Mm.
But all three of the women I was considering marrying before I finally met my wife and knew she was the one had that exact problem, the latter problem. Mm. They couldn't go out on dates without men wanting to lock them down forever. My wife was proposed to after a flight from San Antonio to Orlando, and the guy was serious, and all she was doing was being friendly sitting next to him.
Interesting.
What's the difference between those two women? That's the what do men want question. And you could just as easily, by the way, again, without gender specificity, ask the what do women want question. Mm. And I think it's what I call the big four. First of all, people love confidence. If you don't believe that you're worthy, no one else will either. And for men in particular, that confidence is absolutely the first and distantly leading reason why a guy would be successful with women and another one not, because he believes women should like him. The second one is masculinity as women define it or femininity as men define it. If we're masculine men, we're turned on by her femininity. We're going to want more of that. We're going to want to bask in that warmth. The third one is making each other feel safe and comfortable in our presence. Obviously, that means different things for either, you know, masculine or feminine. But a man wants to know, is this woman going to cheat on me? Is she going to support me? Is she going to talk badly about me and embarrass me in front of my friends? Or you know, is she going to undermine me? Or is she on my team? And the fourth one long term is character. You know, is this person who he or she says she is? And, you know, not only is this par for the course, this dance heterocentrist thing. I mean, it's not a heterocentrist thing. Even in same-sex relationships, it applies. But people who are having a hard time being Mr. or Ms. Right are lacking in some of those areas. I think also a lot of times people well, let me just put it this way. Nowadays, narcissism is almost considered a virtue. Mm. And people are extremely selfish, and they're being marketed to in the dating advice world in a way that says, hey, you know, here's how to get what you want.
Mm.
You know, make this guy marry you. Make this woman have sex with you. Mm. And I think people who are optimistic givers, people who are giving and take joy in that and who also are looking for the best in someone else, have two pillars already set for their relationship. Unfortunately, narcissistic manipulators prey on people like that, so you've got to be really vigilant if you're optimistic and generous. Mm-hmm. But when two optimistic, generous people get together, The third leg of that stool, the third pillar, if you want, is do they connect? Do they get each other? Do they understand where they're coming from? Because when people are on the same wavelength, things like, you know, old dating advice standards like communication and trust, they take care of themselves because she's one of you. You understand what's going on in her mind. I would also add to that that being a strong, powerful woman is not dependent on your political leanings, ladies. You know, unfortunately, I think here in the United States, at least, this is being politicized. Like, you know, women on the right or women on the left are all horrible. But, you know, you can be 100% feminine. You can be 100% all woman all the time. Do ladylike things. You can even wear pink and get your nails done if you want. But you can still be strong. You can be powerful. You don't have to be a doormat. You don't have to be, you know, a victim. You know, and men, I will say this on record, men who are big four men who are confident in themselves and their masculinity and understand how masculinity and femininity work, we appreciate, we want strong, empowered women in our lives.
That's great.
There's nothing like being saddled with someone who's weak and emotionally needy.
You're definitely laying out an interesting treatise, almost like a middle ground, because you're talking about both strength and also softness or sensitivity in both male and female. And,
well, see, I don't think it's softness.
Well, it's a terminology.
And I don't think sensitivity is mutually exclusive from strength.
No, it can be. But, you know, I mean, if you do martial arts, there's the, you know, the Aikido, for example, is, you know, flowing with the energy of the other person. So you harmonize, you know. So sometimes there's a softer, or I mean, you can call it a sensitive energy, and then sometimes there's a stronger energy. But what I like about what you're saying is that love is really a deep understanding of another. You know, when you really understand that person, when you embrace them as they are and accept them, that's power in terms of a great relationship. And I think you're getting to that point. Now, let me switch a little bit, Scott, because you're a very fascinating guy. You know, you can talk a lot in depth, you know, and you have a very, very fascinating way of looking at things. So what really makes you who you are? I know you come from the business world, I think, in the past, analytically driven. And by the way, I have a feeling you're an INTJ on the Myers-Briggs. Am I correct?
No.
What is your type?
ENTP.
Oh, okay, ENTP, okay. But definitely NT is the you know, very knowledge-seeking kind of person. You love knowledge and wisdom.
Well, an INFJ is a person who's continuously misunderstood, and I've not seen that happen in my life. So I'm absolutely... I think in my maturity, I've gone from a P to a J just because I admire that trait.
Yes.
So I've adopted it more.
Okay.
So, I mean, on paper, even though I come out as... an ENTP, and you know, I'm right on the cusp of
I
and E. Okay. I get like it's more like I'm an X.
Okay.
NXX.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
Which don't Google it, by the way.
For those of us that don't know this, this is the personality type Myers-Briggs. That is a very popular test, and I've used it in my book Love Types. But definitely, the NT is definitely the knowledge seekers, very analytical, wisdom oriented people. So tell us a little bit about your background. How did you get over here in this relationship coaching?
Well, I mean, to answer your other question, what makes me who I am now? I mean, I think if you consider Maslow's hierarchy, you know, and by the way, I would think that men are the ones who provide and protect. Masculine energy provides and protects at the lower layers of that pyramid to enable the higher calling of femininity higher up that pyramid. Ooh, that's another modality to look at that, if you will. Mm-hmm. I believe having a strong cornerstone belief system is a very excellent way to identify one's character. Unfortunately, so many people nowadays in our secular humanist-leaning society, I mean, what you believe is up for grabs, and it's really... almost whimsical, and when there's no pinnacle of morality, then it's subject to change and it's subject to interpretation. For me, I like the comfort and I like the peace that comes from knowing that I believe certain things. My yes is going to be yes. I believe in doing what I say I'm going to do. When I sign people up for coaching, I'm very, very clear to them that I'm going to over-deliver. I'm promising less than what I plan on delivering. And as soon as they sign up, the first thing I do is give them value, even while they're still on that very phone call.
But Scott, what I was really asking you is, I mean, were you a businessman? I mean, where do you come from? What did you do before all this?
Well, how far back you want to go?
Well, just tell me in general. What's your background?
I was born at a very young age.
Yes.
Well, you know, I was a shy kid who scored very high on his IQ test after being a sickly child. And I was told, you know, bury your nose in books instead of going and playing sports. And, you know, I was the oldest, so I'm affected by birth order there. I'm a classic oldest. And no one ever taught me how to, you know, deal with girls. So what happened was I got a scholarship to probably the highest, the most well-respected private school in the city where I grew up. And it was just... you know, as a seventh grader, that was incredibly socially intimidating. And since I, you know, all the other kids were there on athletic scholarships and whatever, it was, it really just fed my shyness is what it did. And it hurt.
Right.
It hurt bitterly.
Yes. So how did you overcome how did you overcome failure in life? What's your biggest failure that made you who you are today?
College went well. I mean, through my 20s, I moved west and learned what it meant to be a real man. End up road racing motorcycles and conquering shyness and actually excelling at athletic stuff, even though people told me I couldn't. That house of cards all came crashing down when I married the wrong woman. And she turned out to be to have the whole pretty much alphabet soup of psychoses develop right before my very eyes while we were married. So I became codependent in that relationship, and it was very damaging. And that's probably my greatest failure right there.
I see.
You know, but that's what in turn made it so important to me not to feel like a failure, because I was basically gaslit every day for every reason you can think of for 7 years.
I see.
So, you know, it was a lot to overcome being told I was this terrible guy, even though cognitively I knew I was trying to do everything right. Mm-hmm. So when the marriage dissolved and everybody said, well, you know, you were the best father, best husband ever. You know, we're really sorry this happened to you. I didn't like how that felt, because it made me feel like, you know, I did my best and still got kicked to the curb. So then I was very passionate about transforming myself into a guy who wouldn't fail with women anymore. And that transformation was so spectacular, even in the eyes of people who knew me well socially, that it became my passion to help other people achieve that for themselves. And, you know, and then I met Emily, and she's in on that because, you know, like I said, we're soulmates, we're a team, and here we are today.
That's awesome. So transforming pain into power is one of my maxims. And I think that's a great thing. You know, so you come from some pain and suffering, but you've transformed it. Now you're helping people. So let's say that, Scott, we can summarize, I don't know, some of your wisdom in a tweet. What would be a phrase that you want to get out there to people to encourage them in a little tweet?
Deserve what you want.
Deserve what you want. And I think you have that on your website, if I'm not mistaken.
That's my URL.
Okay. So that's interesting. So what does that really mean? Deserve what you want.
You know, you just said something about transforming pain into power. And I remember when I was 22 years old, I went to apply for a job, you know, with disadvantaged kids to be a mentor to them. And the hiring manager made me so angry at the end of the weekend I spent with him. He said, I'm not going to hire you. Mm. He said, you're too wet behind the ears. You haven't been kicked around the block enough. You don't know how to hurt yet. So you're not going to be suitable. I mean, these people love you. The kids love you. But you're not suitable for this job. And I was so angry. But all my anger was flowing from pure ignorance, because how right he was. You know, I would not be nearly the dating coach, relationship coach I am had I not gone through that first marriage. And deserving what you want presumes that you have to come from somewhere to get to where you're going to be. There has to be something painful in your life that's causing you to want to change that to feeling empowered. So it takes some introspection. There's not an easy button. But most people find that when they're starting to become the person, it doesn't take as long as they think. But, you know, I think deserving what you want and transforming that pain into power are two different lenses through which you can view the same process.
It's very clever, because you're kind of reversing it. Usually people say what you want, you deserve, or go for what you think you deserve.
Yeah, you already deserve it. Now go get it.
Yes, yeah. you're reversing it. So you're saying become the person that you can be, I guess, character and quality human being, and then you attract or you get what you want. think is what you're saying.
Well, I mean, I don't presume that we deserve anything. Mm. And I mean, you know, even when you look at people's relationships with their alleged deity, it's bless me, give me what I'm owed.
Right.
And you know, if you're dealing with a supreme being, I think it's rather arrogant to think that supreme being owes you anything other than what you've already been given in terms of life. Yeah, but I think it's pandemic, the problem you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, there's the purpose-driven idea that, you know, there's a higher purpose for you that you're fulfilling, you know, for the benefit of others. So that's another aspect of it, you know, to be a person that can really give to the world, you know, in society, and that's kind of what you need to live for.
That sounds like a whole different podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think we can go on for a long time. You know, yep. There's a lot of great philosophical and interesting ideas. Now, in terms of, we talk about fear, and I'm actually working on a new book, Transformative, you know, Positive Psychology with Eastern Approaches. And one of the ideas is that, you know, fear can be almost like an entity in our minds. And it can control us in many ways. And to transform that or to master that is a big challenge. What would you say is your biggest fear or has been, and how did you transform it?
Well, to me, fear is the opposite of love.
Yes.
I think I'm not going to go into my specific fears because they're too horrific to mention.
Okay.
You know, I think very deeply about things. So I'm not going to melt anybody's faces because then again, we'll be off on another podcast.
Okay.
But I think the best way to conquer them is to face fear with courage. I love to cite this. I probably should go on the internet and figure out finally who it was who actually said this, because I talk about it probably once every 6 months. Mm-hmm. But there was an interview with a Formula One driver, and the interviewer said to this Formula One driver, "Wow, you guys drive, you know, 900 horsepower cars that weigh 900 pounds, and you know all that acceleration, the power, and the speed, and the death and the fire. I mean, how can you guys be so fearless?"
Right.
And the driver, you know, with laser clarity, just said, "Well, I don't think we're fearless, because fearless Formula One drivers are dead Formula One drivers. What we are is we see that fear and we meet it with the necessary courage to get the job done." Mm-hmm. And I think that's the masculinity there. That's the masculine trait, is courage. I mean, any man in the world who's done something incredibly difficult or fearsome, if he did it right, was probably not unafraid of it, but rather dealt with the courage.
Yeah, exactly. And I say action despite the fear. Right. And also perfect love cast out fear. So I think you're talking about when you have a love that's very strong, you know, it can really, you know, take the fear away. Now, Scott, this has been fascinating. I mean, there's a lot of material. I'm sure you can go on for a long time. And our listeners really, I think, are appreciating what we're talking about. Now, in terms of you right now, is there anything that you're excited about, any business or career venture, anything you're developing that you think can really be amazing that you're excited about in your work?
Well, I'm kind of relaunching something that I dabbled in a little bit earlier, but people are starting to demand more of it from me. And when people are doing that, you kind of have to wake up to the realization that this may be something you're called to do.
Yes.
I'm really becoming more and more passionate about sharing with people this idea of being a location independent entrepreneur and achieving true freedom.
Okay. You know, kind of like the four-hour work week? Are you into the Timothy Ferris idea?
Well, I mean, Tim Ferriss's work week isn't 4 hours. I mean, if you read the book, it's a literal assessment. Yeah. But
the virtual, you know, virtual reality thing.
I'm talking more in terms of being able to have my coaching calls from Beijing or Ethiopia.
Right.
And have that be transparent to the guys I work with.
Sure.
And being able to pick up and go whatever you want. My family are BMX racers, and we took them on the national circuit last year. And you can't just have a day job and leave, you know, 2 weekends a month and take off Friday and Monday while you're doing that. Mm-hmm. And it can't also be unproductive time. I've got to be able to do what I do and do what I'm passionate about and pay the bills, et cetera, while I'm doing that.
I see.
So but I think most people are not as free as they think they are.
Right.
So that's
what you want to do.
And world schooling the kids, too, is a big part.
Of course. So you want to create a portable lifestyle for yourself, or you want others to do it as well? Do you want to teach people?
We already have. But I think it's been so rewarding and so incredibly powerful for us.
Yes.
And people ask us about it all the time.
Excellent.
You know, I'm reminded of an old Emo Phillips joke. He said, people come up to me and they ask me, Emo, do people really come up to you and ask you things? But I mean, in this case, they really do, you know.
Yes.
I don't think a bunch of people are out there asking George Foreman about how they can get their invention notice, like he says in the commercial. But people do actually ask us about, you know, my gosh, you know, look at your Facebook. You guys have been somewhere else. You know, do your kids ever go to school? Okay. How do you get all this done? And, you know, I think people have a choice in the matter. They don't have to be a slave to a cubicle all day long and do what you mentioned. Tim Ferriss, he calls it the deferred life plan, where I'm going to go see the world and everything when I'm retired at 65. And then, oops, they keep pushing the retirement age up to 68 and 72. Yes.
And then you're dead, right? And then it's too late.
Right, exactly. Ain't nobody got time for that.
Exactly like this. So basically, live life on your own terms, you know, create the life you really want. Because life is such a precious thing. You know, we're only here for a short period of time. So Scott, I mean, I really appreciate you being on the show. I mean, this has been one of our most deep and content-filled shows. Very fascinating. You know, you're philosophical and you're very also practical at the same time, which is kind of unusual in people that talk about this stuff, because you really can go deep and you can also be practical. Now, is there any place or way that people can reach you? Tell me about, you know, your contact and everything.
Well, we are happy to give away lots of free things for you. If you're more interested in the entrepreneurial lifestyle and the personal freedom that we talked about, go check out the new website, which is unchainedoffice.com. And there's lots of free reports and soon to be some videos there for you. If you're interested more in the dating advice stuff, I would send women to deservewhatyouwant.com/ladies, plural. And guys, I think the best place for you guys to start, since you're listening to a podcast, would be to listen to my podcast, and that's the Mountaintop Podcast, which Dr. Avila is going to be a guest on.
Yes, I sure will.
Presently. And that's on iTunes under the sexuality category. If you pull up the sexuality category, you're going to see it somewhere near the top. It's blue and white and says the Mountaintop. And that's a podcast for men, not just about dating and advice kind of a matters, but really anything that pertains to your wholeness as a man will be talked about on that show.
Incredible. So, yeah, that's fantastic. And if anyone wants to get a hold of us and wants to talk about the show today or even be a guest or send us questions, they can reach us at lovetype4u@aol.com. That's LOVETYPE, the number 4, letter U at AOL. Also, you can look at our website, loveuniversity.love. We have our blog and other interesting stuff you can look at. And you can reach us at 310-226-8090. So, Scott, again, it's been a pleasure. And I'm sure a lot of people will resonate with this information. It's really been fascinating.
Oh, I hope and trust so. The pleasure's been all mine.
Fantastic. And until next time, this is Dr. Alex Avila with Love University. Put away your backpacks and your pens and pencils, and we'll see you next time.